Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Founders Grid. Today we have Kasaba. He's the founder, co-founder of Captel, captech.io. Kasaba, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So give us a brief background about yourself, what you've been doing prior to this.
Sure. So as perhaps you can detect from the accent, I'm from Hungary originally, was born and raised, studied economics, which led me to basically explore the investment side of the world. And I've been very fortunate that I could build three hedge funds. The largest and latest was a global macro fund. We had offices in Los Angeles and Connecticut. We were managing roughly $2.5 billion for very prestigious investors, pension funds, endowments. And by the sort of 2012, 13-ish, I got conviction that public markets are being dominated by quants and computers. So I was looking for new inefficiencies. And I felt that private markets are very inefficient because they are fragmented. Deal flow is not available in a Bloomberg terminal. So I started allocating more of my time and capital to private markets, and I've made about 25 tech and tech-enabled investments. That led me to meet Blair along the way, one of my partners and the founder of Captel. He was a fellow venture capitalist at a firm called Draper Fisher Jurvetson. Him and our third partner, Chris Olivares, they met at Stanford. They are both engineers. And we basically got together second half of 2018 with the thesis that we believe that we can automate access to private markets investment opportunities. And that's what we are doing right now.
Interesting, interesting. Unfortunate times because of COVID, you know, but it has also acted as a catalyst for multiple businesses. So how is it turning out for Captel, your company these days?
Knock on wood, you know, this is insanely fortunate timing for us because we can help so many entrepreneurs by providing alternative funding sources to them. So typically when you see volatility and sort of economic downturn and when unemployment rises, traditional sort of investors who don't have dynamic real-time data access, they might become more conservative and just tighten their investing or lending standards. And basically, since we built dynamic access to data, so we can evaluate and monitor performance of companies in real time, we are able to be a lot more advantageous and provide funding to various businesses. So it's not only great for us, but I think this is also great for the wider entrepreneurial community out there.
Interesting, interesting. So how do you see post-COVID world evolving, especially from a hedge fund and investment banking perspective? Because this is a domain that believes in wine and dine, and they've been forced to go remote, you know, raising funds remotely over Zoom. And we're talking about big hedge funds, since, you know, you have a prior experience to this. Do you think, would it be possible, or the world will have to go back to the normal way of?
I think that we are learning that technology is creating a lot of efficiencies in our daily life. So I was just having a chat with a friend of mine. I said, like, look, I think the number of coffee meetings I'm going to be taking in the future is going to decrease dramatically. At least coffee meetings for business purposes, because I can be just as effective through a Zoom call or a Google Hangout call, and I don't have to commute anywhere, and I don't need to drink any more coffee. Still, I'm going to enjoy taking coffee meetings socially, etc. So I don't know whether on-site due diligence can be conducted through Zoom calls. So I either processes from large allocators and investors have to change, and I think that will be governed by fear of missing out, supply demand of opportunities, and their own mandates. How aggressively do they need to pursue a certain investment opportunities, and what kind of returns they have to generate? Because ultimately, all of the largest investors are making investments because their future cash flows are dependent on the stream of returns. So I just think that everyone will have to adopt one way or another. I would say that at least the solution that we're providing, as in dynamic ongoing monitoring of any private investments, will reduce the need for more in-person and on-site interaction, just because we have a real-time dashboard. So actually, anyone can monitor any information without having to travel anywhere. But you know, it's TBD. It's only been 2 months, and it's just too early to tell. I think people are just waking up from the coma of this lockdown and trying to figure out what is the new normal and how to conduct themselves on a regular basis.
Got it. Interesting thoughts. So going forward, what piece of advice would you give to young entrepreneurs, especially at seed and series A stage, of how to make their capital raising much more efficient? Because we're seeing, VCs rethinking their investment thesis, and there's a talk going on that every company has been mandated to increase their runways from 12 months to 24 months, right? So what advice would you give to the young companies of how to, it can be mental health or anything, I don't know.
So look, on one hand, it's easy for investors to mandate that you need to increase runway, but it's another thing to be able to raise the money. I would say that this pandemic is more of an amplifier, and it amplifies good and bad. So businesses that have stable business models or promising business models, they're benefiting, and businesses that have questionable business models, they're hurting. I would say that investors will be more selective. So in terms of funding landscape, I would say for entrepreneurs that are still at a pre-revenue stage and concept stage, I don't think that there is much change, because you know, there is still a lot of money out there that is chasing new opportunities. I'd say companies that already have metrics and data, that's a little bit more challenging space to be in, because I think investors' filter is going to become tighter, and they'll be just looking for more sure bets, just because value investing in venture doesn't seem to work. It's more of a momentum type market. So whoever is growing faster is going to garner more attention.
Got it. So last question, and it's more around managing remote teams, since you're a founder of a company, so you'll be managing your teams remotely, right? So how to manage your teams remotely in a better and efficient way?
Look, so this is where we have significant muscle memory. So again, this is very fortunate, at least for us. But first of all, the benefit of being able to work with remote teams is that your pool for finding talent just has increased significantly, because as long as you can manage the time zone, I think there is a lot of talent everywhere. And most people value the need for daily commute or having to go to an office. Therefore, you can give more flexibility to your teammates. But I'd say what works for us is making sure that time zones overlap, making sure that we communicate regularly. We use a platform called Discord, which is a little bit, at least for us, a little bit better than Slack, because we can not only use chat channels, but we can also use voice channels. Mm-hmm. And, you know, instructions from managers have to be very clear.
Yeah.
And most instructions have to be in writing, so there is no ambiguity. So I think it's just be detail-oriented, document all your needs, check in with your teammates regularly, and schedule regular happy hours virtually, so yeah, you can bond with your teammates and do game nights with them. That's what we do, and it works wonderfully.
Nice. Saba, thank you so much for being on the show. It was a pleasure having you. But, you know, my marketing team tells me I have to keep this within 8 to 10 minutes. Otherwise, you know, we could have spoken for an hour at least. Thank you so much for being again on the show.
Of course. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.